This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we find out kind of why Dr. Lonnie Smith is Doctor. The legendary jazz master of the Hammond B3 organ will play in Fayetteville this weekend. He'll talk to Robert Ginsberg about his music and his career.
And a survey to help gauge the direction for the city of Rogers as growth continues.
First, the Jones Center in Springdale wants to make improvements to the facility's outdoor amenities. The plans include building a canopy structure over basketball courts in the center's community park area west of the Jones Center building. Ed Clifford, chief executive officer of the Jones Center, says the construction could extend the usability of the courts from about 6 partial months out of the year to about 9 months that wouldn't be interrupted by rain.
And that is sort of pushed on us because we've established a number of leagues, foosball and volleyball and basketball leagues that have become really popular. And so they tend to tie up the basketball court gym area within the building. And so a lot of the people who used to come just to pick up games in basketball are finding themselves having to wait long periods of time to get to court. So this would allow us to have more people playing basketball and probably using community park more.
The project could also include other recreational facilities, such as converting the old ropes course into 4 soccer fields. But before any of that can happen, the Jones Center needs roughly $475,000 to complete the project, which is why the Jones Center asked Springdale city officials to join in a public-private partnership.
That may or may not be possible. It's an interesting question whether or not a city can spend dollars, public dollars, and locate those dollars on a private property and private facility. We think since it's a community park, it's really not a private facility. We maintain it, but the public uses that whole community park to the west of Jones Center. So we think it makes some sense for East Springdale to be able to expand the recreation opportunity. But it's an interesting legal question. I know the Springdale city attorney is looking at it, and some of the city councils are looking at it. So for us, it's beginning a dialogue about how we can better serve all of Springdale.
Barring any public-private partnership with the city, Clifford says the Jones Center could raise funds for the project through individual donations, grants, or foundation support, much like the center does for its endowment. Clifford says over the past 2 years, the Jones Center has raised $25 million for that endowment.
If all goes according to plan, 2014 will be a busy year for construction of trails in Fayetteville. In a few months, work will begin on portions of the Town Branch Trail. Matt Mihalovich is trails coordinator for the city of Fayetteville.
The first phase that we're building is actually 0.6 miles long, running from Great House Park east toward South School or 71B, and it runs along part of the university's Research Technology Park. There is actually another section of it that's built over by Crown Apartments by Razorback Road. So this is a pretty big east-west connection trail kind of for the south part of town. It'll also tie into the Frisco Trail at Walker Park.
Town Branch Trail, which will be a part of the Razorback Regional Greenway, is only one project for 2014. Mihalovich says several other projects will be moving forward or completed during the year.
The Frisco Trail Southern Extension, that goes from MLK and actually under MLK through the tunnel and then swings around across the South School and then ties in with Walker Park. That's about a half-mile trail that construction's been going really well on it. It started back in August, but we hope to have it finished in late spring, potentially around the 1st of April, to have it all finished and open to the public. And also up north, tying in with Lake Fayetteville, is there's the Clear Creek Trail, which that's a 2.5 mile trail that's going to connect up from the Skull Creek Trail up to Lake Fayetteville. And we expect that to be finished in the late spring, too.
While all of those projects are being built by contracted crews, the city's own in-house trails construction crew will be working on the Salagee Trail, which is a 1.7-mile-long trail that will run south of and parallel to Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and will eventually connect 3 large student apartment complexes to the city's trail system.
New jobless numbers are out today for the state. According to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, December's unemployment rate for Arkansas was 7.4%, a tenth of a percent decrease from November, but still three-tenths of a percentage higher than the state's jobless rate for December 2012.
Springdale-based poultry company George's is recalling 1.25 million pounds of frozen pan-fried chicken tender products. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service announced the recall yesterday. The recall was issued because the company failed to include wheat, an allergen for some, on the product's labels. The issue was discovered during a routine label review, and George's notified the Food Safety Inspection Service. The recalled products include cases of uncooked breaded chicken breast tenderloins and tenderloin fritters packaged between February of last year and the beginning of this year. For more information on the recall, you can visit fsis.usda.gov.
A faculty member at Northwest Arkansas Community College has been named to a national board aimed at increasing the proliferation of science-based education. Dr. Wendy Williams, a mathematics faculty member at NWAC and a member of the Earth Sciences Department faculty at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock, was one of six new members elected to the board of directors for the National Triangle Coalition for STEM Education. According to the City Wire, the coalition is a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit that focuses on communication, advocacy, and programming efforts to advance science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education for all students.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 8 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 15 in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 39, but a wind chill as low as 10 in northwest Arkansas and a high near 42 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows around 26 degrees.
This is Ozarks at Large. Our cars are energy rated for efficiency, as are appliances we use in our homes. But what about our homes? Arkansas has an energy code for new buildings, and it's being updated. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, some organized interests want to weaken the code. But market-driven experts say they're working to spackle the gaps. Here's Jacqueline's story.
Andrea Inglesby, director of the New Homes Division at Home Energy RX, based in Little Rock's on task this morning inspecting a new townhouse, part of a multi-use complex under construction by Jacobs Newell Company off South School in Fayetteville.
So some of the enhancements Jacobs Newell Company does is better insulation, better windows. Their entire envelope is insulated, the thermal envelope, meaning that the ductwork, the HVAC equipment, it's not located in a crawl space or an attic that's uninsulated. It's all right here inside the house, which helps it perform better.
Sunlight streams through large south-facing windows, warming the unheated structure, despite frigid temperatures, revealing just how energy efficient this place is. Inglesby spends her days totally wired up with Bluetooth cell and iPad, constantly entering data crunched with proprietary software. She's assessing this complex for comprehensive LEED certification, established by the U.S. Green Building Council in 2000, measuring water conservation, air quality, sustainable landscaping, as well as energy efficiency. Inglesby's colleague, Gary Kahanek, who directs Home Energy RX Northwest Arkansas, says Fayetteville is the only municipality with a strict energy efficiency construction ordinance enacted September 2012.
All new construction of homes in Fayetteville have to comply.
Builders achieve compliance through third-party home energy raters like Kahanek, an emerging profession, which uses the HERS Index.
And the home energy rating system, the HERS Index, is the U.S. national standard for measuring energy performance in homes.
Home Energy RX and sister company Viridian, a commercial rater, are among a handful of energy rating firms in this state. Among an increasing number of independent certified raters, the rating process begins with blueprints.
And then we follow up with a rough inspection just before drywall so we can inspect the insulation. We verify all the equipment as installed, and we do the performance testing with the building envelope air leakage and the heating and air duct leakage. Those numbers are plugged into the final model that generates the HERS index and also the estimated utility cost.
As Kahanek talks, townhouse developer Todd Jacobs steps through the door.
It gives us data back so we can make financial decisions if we want to try new products, new techniques, versus just kind of winging it. So that's the reason we choose these guys.
Still, certain builders refuse to engage the system, claiming it's just one more level of inspection, says Andrea Inglesby.
And, you know, this is an industry that is very highly traditional.
But she says builders would actually find the HERS index to be flexible and the performance scores valuable.
Which is like a miles per gallon rating for cars. It gives home buyers, potential home buyers, a lot more information to compare and contrast the houses that they're looking at.
With more blazing hot summers and frigid cold winters expected due to climate change, home buyers are aggressively looking to save on heating and cooling costs.
So when a home buyer is out shopping, and a real estate agent is showing them homes within their budget and their location that they want, now they can see that this home scores a 60 and that home scores a 90, and they're the same price. Which home would you pick?
Realtors in Northwest Arkansas are seeking to aggregate the HERS Index and other data to facilitate sales by greening their regional MLS, multiple listing service. Typically, sustainable features are not highlighted, nor are energy-efficient homes codified. Marilyn Shoffit, an agent with Crylike Realtors in Fayetteville, says a green MLS will enable realtors to search web-based menus to locate homes for buyers with efficient features like insulated concrete forms and solar shingles.
There's geothermal. There's Energy Star. So see, those are the ones that have been added where those were not on that drop-down menu before.
42 items altogether. Marilyn Shoffit is part of a Realtor working group under the auspices of the Fayetteville Forward Green Economy Group, which has funded the Green MLS certification. Now, Arkansas developers and builders could refer to the Arkansas Energy Code, adapted from a 2003 International Energy Conservation Code. In 2004, that code, a voluntary measure, was revised, removing certain window and attic insulation requirements. Now it's going through another review to meet a 2009 standard. The Arkansas Energy Office, pushed by organized opposition from home builders, is looking to remove duct testing as well as insulation levels based on climate zones. Ron Hughes operates HERS Incorporated in Little Rock. He's also an instructor at Pulaski Technical College and is responsible for helping to establish a home energy rating system standard in Arkansas more than 30 years ago.
The 2009 code required ducts be tested. Entergy Arkansas has a residential program. They've tested 3,000 houses. Average duct leakage in Arkansas is 39%. And then you look at how many heating and air contractors we have in Arkansas, almost 3,500, and there's probably less than 35 that can test their duct leakage.
Homes are major investments, Hughes points out. Yet in Arkansas, only 2,000 homes, a tiny fraction, have been energy rated. With an effective energy code, he says, real estate agents could better market their product, appraisers and lenders could factor in efficiency, and most important, consumers could comparison shop. He also says many home loan defaults could be prevented based on energy bill savings, making mortgages more secure.
You know, if you want to beat a drum for affordable housing, this is it. If you want to beat a drum for global warming, less pollutants, this is it. Less power plants, this is it. You look at the energy to be saved in housing, and it's just huge.
The Arkansas Home Builders Association, which represents 1,600 merchant residential construction industry members, has been lobbying to relax the code. AHBA President Darlene Strau reads from a prepared statement for this report.
The Arkansas Home Builders Association has worked very closely with the Arkansas Energy Office and with other stakeholders as well to draft a new energy code that will result in more energy-efficient homes while maintaining affordability.
Asked if contractors and developers are worried about the cost of compliance, she read this.
Energy efficiency measures must always be weighed against the cost of those measures to achieve a balance in which the cost of implementation doesn't outweigh the savings to be gained. And in the going with the one zone rather than bifurcating those two zones, we felt that the measures that were involved in going with the zone four would have, the cost of that would have outweighed the benefits.
Some semblance of the 2009 International Energy Conservation Code must be adopted by this state in order to comply with ongoing and future low-income federal housing finance projects and programs. J.D. Lowry is vetting the code. He's deputy director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission Energy Office, which sets minimum efficiency standards for residential and commercial construction.
Because of where we're at now, we're going forward, we're still going to have the two climate zones. What we're looking at doing is adjusting the standards, a couple of the standards to help, make it a little bit more even, but keep the climate zones intact.
And then the duct testing, where does that fall within this?
So, right now it doesn't look like that's something that the state of Arkansas is going to go forward with. You know, it's an added cost, and they're not sure that it's necessary.
Home builders, he says, don't want the burden of paying contractors the extra cost of efficient air ducts. But J.D. Lowry says there will be a trade-off.
Which will be a label that would be on the home for new homeowners that will basically be a nutrition fact. About the efficiency level of the insulation, the windows, the heating and air equipment. So at least, and the home builders will sign it and put their contractor licensing number on there and state that, that this house meets the code.
After legislative and public review, the new code will go into effect by 2015. To date, 30 states have adopted the 2009 IECC residential code, as well as more rigorous versions. As for Arkansas, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy ranks our state 37th in the nation. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, you can visit arkansasenergy.org.
In about 12 minutes on Ozarks, your Theater Valentine offerings this year include the French Revolution, blackmail, and murder.
And in this case, and in most cases with mysteries, If you can guide your audience to laugh at the right times and you work the tension and suspense elements enough, they will quickly understand the difference on how to react.
A preview of the Art Center of the Ozarks Death Trap and a rundown of more theater in February. That's ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Tonight, an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union Address. I'm Robert Siegel. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech, an NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union Address.
Listen to the State of the Union. It begins tonight at 8 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Northwest Arkansas is comprised of several communities that have experienced great growth during the past decade. For example, according to the United States Census Bureau, Rogers had a population of nearly 56,000 in 2010. That's about 17,000 more people living in the city than in 2000. To help plan for the future of the area, the Rogers Lowell Chamber of Commerce is working on a community action plan. The first step in this plan has been gathering community input. This has involved the creation of the website RogersLowellVision.com, where people who live and or work in the Rogers Lowell area can learn more about the plan, as well as participate in a survey that's gathering feedback on a variety of community issues and concerns that may be addressed by the Community Action Plan. Raymond Burns, president and CEO of the Rogers Lowell Chamber of Commerce, says they've created 6 action plans for the community since 1987. Last year, local leaders gathered to see what they had accomplished since the last plan. Burns says most of the major goals had been realized, so instead of revising the previous plan, they decided now was a good time to take a good, hard look at the community and create a new plan.
With the economy coming back the way it is, we really feel like we're just right on the edge. All of Northwest Arkansas is really right on the edge of some really great things happening over the next few years, and we can't afford to get it wrong.
The Chamber has enlisted the help of Market Street Services, an Atlanta, Georgia-based company that did research with the Northwest Arkansas Council in 2010. In an effort to gather the community's input, some residents have participated in a handful of focus groups. Other community members who also want their voices heard can take part in an online survey that will remain live until 5 o'clock Friday afternoon. Brad Phillips, Vice President of Marketing Communications for the Chamber, says it's important for those living in the Rogers area to take advantage of this unique opportunity to offer their input to help make the community a more attractive place to live and work.
Well, I think the floodgates are open already. You look at some of the awards. I was looking through our annual report here. The fact that Northwest Arkansas is number 3 in job growth, newgeography.com last year recognized us for that. You've got the Council for Community and Economic Research calling us the nation's 6th most affordable. And then we're number 4 in private jobs growth. in the University of Arkansas in its September report last year, said that we're an economy that's outgrowing our peer regions. So whether we like it or not, I think we have to help our businesses be prepared to attract a quality workforce so that we can be a world-class community.
The Community Action Plan includes four phases, which will take about 6 months to complete. After gathering stakeholder input, planners will move on to phase two, which consists of a competitive assessment. Whitney Yoder, Vice President of Development for the Chamber of Commerce, explains the consulting group will compare Rogers to other communities that are similar to this region in order to find areas that need improvement. According to the Community Action Plan's website, the Rogers Lowell area will be benchmarked against Springfield, Missouri and Overland Park, Kansas, two communities with which the area competes for both jobs and workers.
And then the third phase is actually they bring the recommendations to us, the Community Action Plan, partly from what they found in the competitive analysis as well as what they found in the stakeholder input phase, and say to us, this is, you know, where we see room for growth, room for improvement, opportunities, some challenges that you may have. And then the last phase is the implementation guidelines to kind of talk through and say, okay, this is how you can implement this plan, so that then we have benchmarks going forward once the consultant is out of the picture and we know how to implement those things. We can track our progress. We can see what we've done and how we're making those improvements.
The steering committee for the Community Action Plan consists of about two dozen community leaders from the public, private, and nonprofit sectors. Raymond Burns, president and CEO of the Rogers Lowell Chamber of Commerce, is a member of the committee, which offered input to Market Street Services before the consulting firm created questions for the survey. A number of the questions ask about downtown Rogers, which Burns says will be helpful in a separate downtown Rogers master plan that's being worked on. Other questions in the survey ask about the local school district, the area's strengths and weaknesses, the community's infrastructure, and quality of life. Burns says one of the things that keeps him up at night is thinking about the point at which the local communities can no longer handle the type of quality employees world-class companies need. If they can't attract the necessary talent, these businesses will likely go someplace else. Burns says it's important to stay ahead of the curve, and quality of life issues will determine the area's future more than anything.
One of Rogers' strengths over the years has always been that we've looked at quality more than we've looked at quantity. And because we've been so fortunate with the other plans that we've done to stay ahead of that growth as much as we possibly can, I think that it hasn't been as big a burden as it would have been if, for instance, the growth came and there were no roads. And I know we've got orange barrels all over the city right now, and we're fixing to have a whole lot more. But in a lot of cases, especially out in the western part of Rogers, we were able to get water, sewer, and most of the main roads in before the growth actually came, and that attracted the growth. So because we've been proactive and because we've been more concerned with quality than quantity, I think that at least the majority of things that I hear is that they want us to proceed cautiously. They certainly want us to look at the quality over the quantity and just be smart about the way we do things, and this study will help us do that.
Burns expects by the end of the year, the committee will have assessed the results of their research and have submitted a plan to the public. He expects to start implementing some of their plans by next year. The goal will then be to see how much they can accomplish in the next 5 years or so before they think about creating another community action plan.
We are poised to grow. I mean, we're just right on the edge getting ready to take this to the next level, and we really want folks to chime in. I mean, this is the one opportunity you have to define the community you live and work in. And we'd like to hear what our residents really have to say. And I'm most curious about that, because this is the community's plan. This isn't the chamber's plan or the city's plan. This plan belongs to the community. We'll be charged with trying to implement some of it, maybe not all of it. The city will be. There may be other groups that will be in charge of implementing portions of it. So it's always exciting to see what people have to say about you.
Burns estimates they have received about 1,200 survey responses so far. That's about 2% of Rogers' total population. If you live and or work in the Rogers Lowell area and would like to give your input about the community's future, you can log on to rogerslowellvision.com to take the survey. The questionnaire will be available until 5 o'clock Friday afternoon. After that, local residents can return to the website during the next couple of months to keep updated on the plan's progress. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Well, you missed it, didn't you?
What'd I miss?
Probably.
You missed Susan Young speaking Saturday at Hobbs State Park.
I did.
See?
Sorry.
I did, too. But the good news is that the Friends of Hobbs State Park speaker series continues all year, and I have a rundown for you.
All right.
And Susan will be back in August.
Well, there you go.
All right. February 8th, Steve Dunlap talking about the Osage, the Native Americans that were in the area of Hobbs State Park. March 22nd, Robert Rousey talking about the amazing Sanborn fire maps. Do you know what a Sanborn fire map is?
I don't, Antoinette.
No.
Coolest things ever. They were made a long time ago by fire insurance companies. And if you can find them, they've been made since 1867. If you can find them, you can see the footprints of buildings, what they were built out of, the number of stories, lot lines, road width. So you can pretty much walk through a community using these maps.
Do they exist for towns in Northwest Arkansas?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Oh, okay.
So this will be really interesting. On April 12th, Terry Lane will be talking about building backyard habitats. May 3rd, Leah Whitehead talking about historical events in Benton County.
Right.
On May 24th, Dennis Dean talking about Arkansas bears. He says in the last 2 years, more black bears have been documented in Benton County than in previous years before that. June 14th, Robert Thomas talking about dragonflies, followed by a catch and release. July 6th, David Chapman talking about prairie restoration. Mm-hmm. July 19th, Dayton Steelman talking about insects that suck.
Jiggers, ticks, mosquitoes.
Yes, in three separate parts. August 2nd is Susan Young back talking about before Beaver.
When it was just the White River going through.
August 16th, Dan Scoff talking about tornadoes. September 13th, Austin Jones. Very interesting. A presentation on local creepy crawlies.
I like it.
September 20th, Alan Bland talking about what it took to make Beaver Lake. October 12th, Scott Noble on tree identification. October 25th, Tom Dugan on railroads of Northwest Arkansas. And November 30th, Tom Dillard on the Butterfield Stagecoach Line and what it meant to Northwest Arkansas.
Wow.
All of these are free.
I was about to say, what's a season pass? If I wanted to go to every one of these and I wanted to buy that season pass right now, how much would I pay?
It might cost you the piece of paper to print the schedule out so you could keep track of it. And these all happen usually on Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock. You can find out more at 789-5000.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. January has been relatively quiet for area theater companies, but almost everybody will be back on stage by the middle of next month. In a moment, we'll hear how the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is bringing back a time-honored mystery thriller, Death Trap. Actually, the live theater offerings begin this month with a one-night-only presentation of Still Awake Still at Walton Art Center in Fayetteville. The musical comedy is inspired by the all-too-familiar struggle for parents of trying to convince their children to go to sleep. In this production, the legendary Ms. Ivory Ticklefinger tries to convince the audience they should go to sleep with predictably bad results. The show is Friday night at 7 and described as best for children ages 4 to 10. From February 4th through the 9th, the Walton Arts Center hosts I Love Lucy, an onstage tribute to some of the iconic moments from that legendary sitcom. Expect Ricky, Fred, Ethel, and we bet a faster-than-desired conveyor belt of chocolate candy. I Love Lucy has 7 shows, including matinees on Saturday and Sunday, February 8th and 9th. Tickets start at $29. February 6th through the 9th, the University of Arkansas's Studio Series presents its undergraduate production of the semester. It's The Bachelorette. The setting is simple. The night before a wedding, the bride and her friends talk about life. The play is funny and intended for mature audiences because of strong language. Tickets may be purchased for the production at drama.uark.edu. This studio series play is staged inside Studio 404. That's inside Kimple Hall on the U of A campus. It does have limited seating. Later in February, on the main stage at the university, Spring Awakening will be presented. The Tony Award-winning musical is based on a German musical of the same name and was created by Duncan Sheik and Steven Sader. Sader, by the way, came to Fayetteville years ago to work on other plays as part of the original playwrights retreat held for several summers on Mount Sequoia. He won two Tonys, by the way, for Spring Awakening. The U of A production opens February 21st and runs through March 2nd. Theater Squared opens their next work, Good People, with a preview on Thursday, February 13th, then dates that will run through March 9th. This Tony nominee for Best Play is set in Boston and follows a woman struggling to make ends meet as she rekindles with an old flame who has become himself quite financially successful. There are laughs and blackmail to come. All performances are at Nadine Baum Theater in Fayetteville. You can learn more or buy tickets at theater2.org. That's theater, the numeral 2.org. The play did earn the 2011 Best Play Award from the New York Drama Critics. Arts Live uses an award-winning source for its February production, The Bridge to Terabithia. The musical is inspired by the Newbery Award-winning novel and will open Friday, February 13th. The young cast will have five performances through Sunday the 16th at the Arts Live Theater on Sang Avenue in Fayetteville. More information at artslivetheater.com. Trike Theater in Bentonville will present the live version of The Fantastic Mr. Fox late in February at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville. We'll have more about that production on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large, but you can learn more now at triketheater.org. The Young Actors Guild will bring The Cat in the Hat to life late next month at the King Opera House in Van Buren. Dr. Seuss's seminal children's book will be presented five times between February 27th and March 2nd. You can find out more at yagonline.org. That's Y-A-G, yagonline.org. Tickets for each production begin at $10.
There was a time when men were kind, when their voices were soft, and their words inviting. There was a time.
Rogers Little Theater will bring Les Miserables to their downtown stage next month. The incredibly popular musical, based on Victor Hugo's 1862 novel, will open at RLT on Valentine's Day night and then continue through March 2nd. There are dinner theater performances, and if you'd like a ticket to see Jean Valjean try to evade Inspector Javert, you may purchase them at rogerslittletheater.org, or you can call 631-8988. Alma Performing Arts Center examines 35 years in a marriage with the play Four Poster. It opens with a young couple buying a house in 1890 and follows them as they raise children, plan weddings, and eventually leave the house. The Four Poster of the title refers to the silent witness to their lives. That's a bed in their bedroom. The production is at the Alma Performing Arts Center from Thursday, February 6th through Sunday the 9th. Tickets available at almapac.org. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith Theater Department presents Crimes of the Heart, February 13th through the 21st. The Pulitzer Prize-winning script follows three sisters through some pretty rough times in rural Mississippi. The play is part of the UAFS Season of Entertainment 33. It's suggested for audience members 13 and older. More information can be found at the Season of Entertainment links at uafs.edu. And there is murder in Springdale next month.
I think that when Ira Levin wrote this, he did a great job of manufacturing exactly what he was writing the play about, which was a two-act play with three scenes each, five characters in one location.
Harry Blundell is the director of the Art Center of the Ozarks production of Death Trap.
Just a really great, finely drawn story with enough twists and turns to keep you thinking.
The 1978 play does indeed have five characters and about twice as many twists. Ira Levin's script was an instant success on Broadway, running for nearly 1,800 performances, earning a Tony nomination for Best Play, and receiving an Edgar Award as Best Mystery. It spawned a 1982 film starring Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve. It's a mystery, so little will be revealed here. But a major twist hinges on a relationship between two characters, a twist Harry says was perhaps far more unexpected for audiences 35 years ago.
I certainly think that because our sensitivities are different, a lot of things that might have appeared to be in the play in when it was written for shock value do not have the same repercussions as we would now expect that to be. So I've had to be careful in some ways to make sure that when those things get diminished, other things become enlarged. Doesn't change the meaning of the show. It just it fits our perspective better.
When the play opened in the late 70s, it was a contemporary piece. The playwright at the heart of the script used a typewriter, and carbon paper is mentioned. Forward to 2014, and ACO has again, without disrupting the actual script, made the piece contemporary. Deceit, double cross, and larceny are rampant. Audience members new to the play will probably be surprised more than once. A mystery thriller brings its own kind of challenges, Harry says. He says observing an audience for a comedy, he can quickly tell if the production is landing. There's, of course, laughter. He says he'll look for more subtle signs during Death Trap.
You know, I sit in the back of the house always because I can kind of get the bird's eye view. And the thing about suspense is that, and actors are affronted by this sometimes, laughter will come at the most inauspicious time for the actor. And what you have to realize is that everyone responds differently. And sometimes, especially in a large group, when you're taken by surprise, not everybody's going to scream. Some people are going to laugh. And once the laugh starts, the laugh grows because we want to laugh. And in this case, and in most cases with mysteries, if you can guide your audience to laugh at the right times and you work the tension and suspense elements enough, they will quickly understand the difference on how to react. The visual for me usually is watching the audience, and when I can see people leaning up to the edge of their chair, or I see their heads perked, I can tell that they're paying attention and they know what's going on and they're being drawn into what's happening.
Death Trap is designed to allow for moments of aha. It is a play within a play at times, the fictional play, also called Death Trap, and close attention is rewarded. For some members of the cast, there is a nuanced experience as well. If an actor is playing a lying, cheating murderer, he or she is, in a sense, acting on multiple levels.
I just had this discussion with one of the characters because one of the characters portrays something that he is not for a long period of time and then all of a sudden becomes another person and then another person and another person. And rapidly within the course of a scene, we discover that everything we thought about somebody is not true at all. In fact, we don't know anything about the person that's there. So that is an interesting dilemma for the actor. Hopefully you play it truthfully enough each one of those times that when you twist, that's what gets people excited.
You can learn more at artcenteroftheozarks.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, as President Obama gets ready to deliver his fifth State of the Union address, we'll listen back to other fifths.
And tonight I ask you to give me what 43 governors already have. Give me a line item veto this year.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
Dr. Lonnie Smith has accomplished just about everything one could in a musical career. The list of his collaborators includes almost every jazz musician of note for the past half century. He's toured the world. He's headlined at the major jazz festivals. He's been named Organ Keyboardist of the Year by the Jazz Journalists Association 5 times. But he's never played in Arkansas. He'll check that off the list this weekend. Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz program every Friday and Saturday night, recently talked to him. ¶¶
When writing about the jazz legend and master of the Hammond B3 organ, Dr. Lonnie Smith, Bill Bennett wrote for the Jazz Times, "Sitting behind a hulking Hammond B3 organ, Dr. Lonnie Smith is a riddle wrapped in an enigma wrapped in a turban. Few people know whether the 72-year-old jazz veteran earned a doctorate in medicine or music. The answer, neither. One story has it he earned his doctor moniker from his fellow musicians as a tribute to his ability to doctor up their music. Another theory is that he adopted the nickname in the mid-70s to distinguish himself from another jazz keyboardist, Lonnie Liston Smith. And what about the turban? Well, Smith claims it's an authentic Sikh wrap, though the Buffalo, New York native seems more Baptist than Sikh. In the course of Dr. Lonnie Smith's 50-year-plus career in the world of jazz, he's never appeared in Arkansas, but that's soon to change. He'll be at the Walton Arts Center as part of the Starlight Jazz Series on February 1st. I had an opportunity to speak with Dr. Lonnie Smith from his home in Florida and learn some interesting facts about how he came to music relatively late in life. We're long overdue to have you come up to Arkansas and pay us a visit.
Well, I'm ready.
I know you grew up in Buffalo, New York, and you were exposed to music as a child through the church, and at your house you used to sing, and I think in your early days in school you played around with the trumpet. But there's a great story about how you and the Hammond B3 organ came together, and it has to do with a gentleman that owned a music store where you used to hang out.
Robert, I'm going to tell you the real story. I guess you want to hear it from me, right?
I know you had to tell it before, but I'd love to hear it from you.
No, you want to hear the... No, they haven't got the real story. The organ and I, we were birth twins. And we were born together. That's how that happened.
You have to explain that a little bit.
No, we are twins. What happened, I used to go and sit in the music store all the time. And I'm sitting in the store every day after we closed. And one day he said, "Could I ask you a question, son?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Why do you come in every day?" And you said, "The closing time." Now, there was no organ in there, Robin. I said, "Well, sir, if I had an instrument, I could learn how to play. And if I could play, I could make a living, you know." And so I went home, kept coming back. I was just set. And one day he closed the place, and he took me in the back where he had a house. And when he opened the door, the organ was sitting, staring dead at my long lost twin. I ran over there to the organ. I set up the organ. He said, "If you can get this out of here, it's yours."
He gave it to you?
It happened just like that for me. I put it, did I get it out of there? My brother and I put it in a truck, in the back of a truck. It was snowing in Buffalo. And I was in the back holding on to the organ. In the snow. I love this thing. I mean, I put the organ in the house, we put it in, and I didn't even really know how to turn it on. That's about, you know, I figured it out. I turned the organ on, and I didn't, you got all of these push buttons and stops, and, you know, it's like a spaceship, right?
Yes, it is like a spaceship.
And I didn't know how, I didn't know what button works, what this works, and I start pulling. Sliding, and the only sound I got was the same sound. It didn't make any other sound to me, you know. I say, "That's not what I've heard before. I'm pulling knobs, but nothing was happening." So I called a friend. He came, Joe Madison. He came, and he said, "Oh, this works. This works. That. This works. That." And that's it. That was it. That was it. That's all it took.
Smith's music career really skyrocketed in the mid-60s, particularly after he hooked up with a young guitarist out of Pittsburgh named George Benson. This led to a record deal with Columbia Records and further collaborations with some of the giants of jazz at that time, including saxophonist Lou Donaldson and trumpeter Lee Morgan, just to name a few.
All of a sudden, this fellow by the name of George Benson. You know,
George Benson. Yes, I do know.
Yeah, he was a little young fella. You know, he could play a little bit. He was really something. And I said, "Wow, boy can play." So George said, "Hey, man, wow, let's get a group." I said, "Okay," because I love this band. We went to his mother's basement in Pittsburgh. That's where he's from. We went to Pittsburgh. Now watch this, Rob. We learned two songs, Clockwise and Secret Love. Clockwise was on our first album. I said, "Let's go." So we took off with two songs to New York City. Now, this is a funny thing. We were playing at that club, 125th and 7th Avenue, behind Go-Go Girl. It's not funny, Rob. It was behind Go-Go Girl.
I'm just trying to picture this.
Oh, come on, man. So we were playing, and George said, get down. We're going to play something now. So he told the girls, we got down, and we played some jazz. And John Hammond loved it. He wanted to sign us right on the spot in the club. So he signed George up, and guess what? I was in the package. He signed me up.
So this was for Columbia Records, right?
Yeah. I said, whoa. Signed me up, he signed George up, and he signed myself up.
That was Clockwise from a 1966 recording on George Benson's LP, It's Uptown, featuring Dr. Lonnie Smith on Columbia Records. So the word was out. The doctor is in the house, and after only a year on the scene, every jazz musician in New York City wanted a piece of Dr. Lonnie Smith on their recordings.
Now, Lou Donaldson is in the studio.
Okay.
It went that smooth. I'm just that quick. Now they said they needed somebody. They called George Benson, Idris, Muhammad, and me, myself. We went in the studio, and we hit Alligator Boogaloo.
Oh, boy. That was a million seller, wasn't it?
And that was a hit. So now, and on that record, you heard a lot of organ on that. So I said, uh-oh. So now Duke Pearson called me and Frank Wolf on Blue Note. They said, they want to sign you. I said, no. I couldn't believe it. Because they had, if anyone knew Blue Note, Blue Note had all the greats over there. Now, George and I was with Columbia Records, but Blue Note called me and they wanted me over there. I said, oh, boy. So I didn't tell anybody because I couldn't believe it myself. I didn't get excited. I just, you know, well, if it happens, it happens. If not, I don't know, you know. And it happened. And now I go in the studio, and guess what happened, Robert?
What happened?
I get a hit. Now, George and I were with Columbia Records. We just started. Now my record started moving. Now, they're calling me to do concerts, and I don't have a group. So I had to get George to go out with me. I didn't have a group. So now I'm out. I'm out there.
This is all happening pretty fast, it sounds like.
It happened pretty fast. Now, I'm doing concerts. They have Motown groups doing concerts with us, and Lou and everybody, and I'm headlining the concert. Oh, I tell you, come on, Bobby, you couldn't have it no better than that.
But it has gotten better for Dr. Lonnie Smith. He went on to record over 10 LPs with Blue Note Records, five of those as a leader. And he continued his relationship with Columbia Records as well, releasing a handful of recordings with them. He further went on to record on Emercy, Milestone, Muse, and Rounder Records, culminating with the formation of his own record label just a few years ago, Pilgrimage Records. It's a Cinderella story for this self-taught maestro of soul. And in his career, he's found himself performing and recording with the likes of Jimmy McGriff, Blue Mitchell, Stanley Turrentine, Randy Brecker, John Scofield, Marvin Gaye, and believe me, that's just a short list. Dr. Lonnie Smith will appear for the very first time with his trio at the Walton Arts Center on February 1st. Jonathan Blake on drums and Jonathan Kreisberg on the guitar, along with the doctor at the Hammond B3 organ. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Robert Ginsberg.
Dr. Lonnie Smith's shows are Saturday night at 7 and 9 at Walton Arts Center. Robert Ginsberg talked to him earlier this month. You can hear Robert's program, Shades of Jazz, every Friday and Saturday night at 10 here on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Strickler.
Remind me where Strickler is again?
Well, if you're headed towards Devil's Den, which I did this weekend, yes. You can take a turn that will take you to Strickler.
That's right. How was camping? Not too cold?
Well, you know, the nights were cold.
Sure.
The days were beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We did the Yellow Rock Trail, and there were still many icicles, even though it was in the 50s and 60s.
Huh.
First time I've spent the night at Devil's Den when it's almost empty. There were a few other campers.
Yeah.
But it's something else. And when you wake up at 6 and you kind of look out and all the leaves are off the trees and you hear the water, for a second, you think you're on The Walking Dead. You're waiting for...
Oh!
Well, you know, it's
I thought
just
you
sort
were
going to so
say
still.
Something much more profound and calming, but
no,
you're just waiting to be destroyed by zombies.
Right.
Okay.
That was a wonderful time. Wonderful time.
That was such a good promotion for camping at Devil's Den on an empty weekend. Good
yes.
job. They'll be calling you any minute now for that official endorsement.
It was beautiful. Did
yes,
I say that? It was beautiful.
You did. It All was right. beautiful indeed.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You will be with Christina tomorrow.
I will.
On this very program.
I will.
You and I back together on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We'll end the show with music from Pete Seeger. He died last night in New York at the age of 94. This is from the Smothers Brothers. The song is Waist Deep in the Big Muddy.
One night by the light of the moon, the captain told us to ford a river. That's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy. The big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I've forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination. Men, follow me, I'll lead on.